Monty Carson was in his usual position in front of the jail, leaning back in a chair with his hat down over his eyes and his feet crossed on the hitch rail. A barefoot boy of 9 or 10 ran up to him and tugged on his shirt sleeve.
Mr. Carson, Bob over at the post office said for me to give you this.
The boy stuck a wrinkled envelope in Monty's hand. Monty pushed his hat back and scowled at the boy in mock anger for a moment.
Didn't your mama ever teach you not to wake a man when he's sleeping?
But Mr. Bob said to give it to you right away, and not to go messing around till I done it.
I'm just funning with you, Jeremy. Here, this is for doing such a good job of delivering messages.
Monty reached in his pocket and handed Jeremy a coin.
Wow! A whole dime! That'll get me 10 peppermint sticks over at the store.
Now, don't you go eating all of them at one time, getting a bellyache. Your mama will have my hide if you do.
Yes, sir, Mr. Carson. No, sir.
Monty sighed, trying to remember when he had been that young and life had been that simple. He slit the envelope with a thumbnail and pulled the letter out. As he read it, his face wrinkled in a frown over its contents. After a moment, he rested the piece of paper in his lap and sat there, eyes unfocused, thinking about what he should do. Finally, he got up and stretched. Monty walked down the street toward Louis Longmont's saloon, his gunfighter eyes scanning buildings and the citizens of Big Rock he was sworn to protect. He was about to put them in more danger than they had ever been in before. Walking slowly through batwing doors, he paused for a moment out of habit to let his eyes adjust to the semi-darkness.
You may enter, Monty. There isn't anyone here waiting to bushwhack you.
Monty grinned. Louis, an expert gunman himself, had recognized and appreciated his caution when entering a room without knowing who might be waiting inside.
That's mighty easy for you to say, Louis. You ain't walking around town with a tin target pinned to your chest.
Louis shook Monty's hand without rising from his corner table, one reserved for the owner of the saloon and gambling house.
Can I have Andre fix you something to eat? Or are your taste buds permanently ruined by eating that fire food down at Maria's Cantina on the edge of town?
Sure, I'd love some grub, long as it ain't frogs or snails or any of those other French delicacies your man is always trying to push on me.
Andre, how about fixing the sheriff some real Western cuisine? Something like a beefsteak, burnt black and charred, fried potatoes, and some of those vine-ripened tomatoes we were saving for someone special.
And a pot of coffee. Hot, black, and strong. We're gonna need it.
Bad news? Not about smoke, I hope.
Here, read this, and then we'll talk.
To Sheriff Monty Carson, Big Rock, Colorado, from Texas Rangers Branch Office in San Antonio. Dear Sheriff Carson, in answer to your inquiry of last week, there has been some news of the gunfighter Sundance Morgan. He and a gang of about 20 or 30 men are alleged to have robbed a stage line office in South Texas and killed the station master, his wife, the stage driver and shotgun guard, and a passenger. Apparently, 3 female passengers were taken with them, and when they fled, the station master's daughter, a girl of 13, managed to hide and escape serious injury when the station and stage were set on fire. She didn't see much, but remembers the name Sundance being mentioned several times by the bandits. When they left, she said they rode off to the north. She says she also heard the name Smoke Jensen mentioned. Regards, Ranger Captain Ted Longley. Whew. Looks like Smoke was right. This Sundance character is on the prod for him, and has an abundance of help.
Yep. My guess is they'll be here within a week. That letter's dated 10 days ago, so the gang could be over halfway here by now. I don't figure Sundance is going to let any grass grow under his feet looking for smoke. Vengeance is a powerful motivator.
And unless I miss my guess, you have a plan for when the gang arrives in Big Rock.
Just let me finish this steak and I'll tell you all about it.
While the sheriff ate, Louis leaned back and smoked his cigar, thinking about all the times he and Smoke had pulled iron together. He wished Smoke had dealt him into this hand, but he supposed he respected the man's desire not to get any of his friends hurt because of his actions. Finally, Monty was through with his meal.
Jesus, Louis, but that Andre can cook a mean steak. You ever want to get rid of him, he can come live with me and the missus.
Not likely, Monty. Not while I still have teeth and can chew. Now, tell me what you've planned for Sundance if he and his men ride into Big Rock.
Not if, Louis, but when. I know that snake will come here looking for Smoke first. He don't know the area, and I doubt if he's smart enough to find out where Smoke's ranch is without trying here first.
You aren't planning to try to handle 20 to 30 men with just you and your three deputies, are you?
No, not exactly. I intend for the good citizens of Big Rock to take care of Sundance Morgan and his gang. With your help, if you're willing.
Monty, I think I know what you have in mind, and I like it.
Meet me on the field where we had the 4th of July picnic at 5 o'clock. I'm calling a town meeting.
I'll close the saloon and have all my employees come with me. We'll need every gun we can get.
Soon the fall sun was inching toward the horizon, casting long, cool shadows by the time the town's inhabitants had all gathered at a large field just beyond the city limits. Monty stood on a small wooden bandstand and addressed the crowd.
Good citizens of Big Rock, we got trouble headed our way, and unless we stand together, we're going to be in for a tough time.
Al Jameson, owner of the livery stable, was standing in the front row. He held up his hand like a kid in school. Monty nodded at him.
Al?
What kind of trouble, Sheriff?
Y'all remember that little fracas we had here a few years back when Tilden Franklin attacked the town? Well, one of the gunmen he hired at the time, a man named Sundance Morgan, is on the prod, wants some revenge for what happened that day.
Is he coming for you, Sheriff Carson?
No. Matter of fact, he's not coming for anyone in this town. He's got him a gang of 30 or so men, and he aims to kill Smoke Jensen.
But Smoke ain't here. He headed up on into the mountains. Left several days ago with Miss Sally. He told me he was taking her to the train to go back east, and he was going hunting up in the High Lonesome.
That's true. Trouble is, Sundance Morgan don't know that. I figure he and his men will head here to find out where Smoke's ranch is and see if he happens to be in town.
If that's so, why do you think the town's in for trouble? Seems to me the only one in trouble is Smoke Jensen.
Just what do you think 30 of the toughest desperados this side of Texas are going to do when they get to town and find out Smoke Jensen ain't here? Go to church, maybe? Hell no, they're not. They'll try to ride roughshod over this town and all its citizens. At the very least, they'll shoot up the place to send Smoke a message about how tough they are.
Monty? You sound like you have some idea about what we ought to do about these skunks that are on their way up here.
I do. I've been thinking on it. And I come to the conclusion that the best way for us to survive this invasion by gunfighters is to be ready for them when they hit the outskirts of town.
What do you mean, ready for?
From this day on, I want every person in town, excepting the children, to go armed at all times. I want volunteers to station themselves on top of some of the buildings where they can command a good line of fire into the street.
What about those of us who don't know how or don't want to use a gun, Mr. Carson? What can we do to help the town?
You're right, Miss Kathy. Lots of folks don't know nothing about shooting other folks. After all, this is a civilized town. Anyway, those of you who don't want to use firearms can help the men on lookout by bringing them water and food and such, so they don't have to leave their post every time they get the urge. A few of you and the children can help out by staying a couple miles out of town on that ridge down to the south and rushing back here to give the rest of us some warning when they see the others coming. 30 men on horseback will kick up quite a dust cloud. They should be visible long before they get here.
What about those of us who want to help but don't have no money nor no job so as we can buy a gun?
Lewis Longmont climbed on the bandstand next to Monty.
I will provide every man in this town with a pistol, rifle, or shotgun who will agree to use it to protect his fellow citizens.
Lewis pointed to Gus McCray, owner and operator of the shop with the largest selection of firearms in town.
Gus, you have my pledge in front of the entire town. I will stand good for any guns you sell for this purpose. Just keep a list, and I'll settle with you after all this is over. That includes ammunition, too.
Wait a minute. Why should the good law-abiding citizens of Big Rock go out of their way to help a known gunfighter and killer like Smoke Jensen? I'm asking all of you women out there, especially those of you in the Sunday school class that I teach, to go home to your husbands and tell them you won't abide their taking part in this violence.
Oh, I can see your point, Miss Jones. I surely can. Why should we go out of our way to help Smoke and Sally Jensen? What have they done for us that should make us stand behind them in their time of need? Well, right after Smoke founded Big Rock, and Miss Sally had her folks get a bank set up that has, over the years, given most of you loans to set up your businesses or buy crop seed and horses in bad times. Smoke went to the Reverend and gave him $10,000. He said it was cash he'd been paid for going after a few outlaws a while back, reward money. He said he wanted it to do some good, so he gave it to him and told him to parcel it out to anyone he thought needed a helping hand. No restrictions other than they needed it. He asked me to keep quiet about it, said he didn't want anyone to know where it came from, other than the church and good folks of Big Rock. Now, how about you saying a few words, Miss Kathy?
Priscilla Kathy, the school marm, raised her face and took off her bonnet so she could be heard.
Miss Sally Jensen came to me right after I arrived from New York. It seems she and Smoke had paid my way out here and guaranteed my salary for 5 years. Plus, they built the schoolhouse out of their own funds and provided most of the books and other teaching materials that I use to teach your children how to spell and cipher. Miss Sally also takes over the class when I'm sick and can't teach, as most of you know. And she gives me money each and every month to give to those kids I see who don't have enough to eat or who don't have proper clothes or shoes to come to school in. She made me promise to give the money to the children in private so they wouldn't have to be embarrassed about taking charity and to never tell them where it came from.
Thank you, Miss Kathy. I could go on for hours about all the things Smoke and Sally Jensen have done for Big Rock. All the drunks and down-and-outers he's taken out of my cells and put to work on his ranch so they could feed their families. All the children that they got ponies to ride to school and back on. All the businesses he's bailed out of trouble when times were lean. But I won't. If there's anybody in this town, other than Miss Fiona there, who don't know who this town's best citizen and best friend is, then they ought to move on down the line. Because they've been living here with their heads buried in the sand. I say we do this not so much for Smoke Jensen, oh God knows he deserves it, but for Big Rock and ourselves. If it ever gets known that our town can be treed by a bunch of sorry gunslicks ride the Owlhoot Trail, then we might as well burn down the buildings ourselves, settle somewhere else, because it'll happen again. See my Deputy Jim for your assignments and stations. He'll also keep track of who's going to be on lookout for the gang's arrival.
After you talk to Jim, come on over to my place for a free round of beer. Yeah!
Thanks for your help, Lewis.
Don't mention it, Monty. I owe Smoke my life on several occasions. And even more important than that, he's my friend.
The two men walked back toward town, where together they would plan how to best defend their small community and make it a fortress against Sundance Morgan and his gang. Smoke Jensen was enjoying his time alone in the up high. The sight of wild game, the explosion of color in the late blooming fall wildflowers, and the extreme wildness of the high country recharged his soul and brought him inner peace.
Horse, this is surely the most beautiful country God ever made.
Horse snorted and waggled his ears as if in agreement with his master. Smoke rode with his Henry rifle slung across his saddle horn, eyes scanning the mountain above him for just the right place to make his stand. The air was crisp and cold, but not bitterly so, and it smelled of pine needles and fresh snow on the way. Patches of ice-covered snow had gathered in shady areas, but most of the trail was still clear, with occasional small boggy mud holes from previous ice melts. Smoke had removed his buckskin shirt and hat, taking advantage of the bright afternoon sun to tan his hide even darker than it already was. He didn't want any pale skin to reflect moonlight and give his position away in the nighttime fighting he knew was coming. On the second day after he left Puma Buck's camp, he found what he was looking for. A natural fortress only a few hundred yards below the top of the mountain. Backed on three sides by sheer rock walls extending skyward, the place had a level meadow dotted with large ponderosa pines and a ridge in front. From there, the ground fell off at a steep angle downward to end along a single trail up the mountain. There were few trees or boulders large enough to provide cover for his enemies between his fort and the path the men would have to take to get to him. He had a clear line of fire, and the grade was too steep for the outlaw's horses to climb with riders on their backs. They would have to approach him on foot if they dared. Leaving horse down below on the trail, he pulled and tugged his pack horses up the hill, one at a time. Once there, he unloaded some of his supplies. He unpacked his gear. After he had it all laid out on the ground, he planned how he wanted it distributed and set various rifles and guns and bundles of dynamite in different spots. He knew he was likely to take some lead in the upcoming fight, and he feared he might not be as mobile as he wanted to be. It was essential that he have weapons in several locations, because he didn't know where he might be if he got hit. He made a mark, ablaze with his knife, down low on each of the trees behind which he hid weapons. His bright mark on the wood would show up well in either moon or sunlight. With each bundle of dynamite, he secreted some lucifers wrapped in wax paper to keep them dry in the event of snow. After a while, when he was certain he had done all he could to prepare his battleground, he took the pack animals back down the hill to where he had left horse. He removed his saddle and bridle from horse and gave him an apple while he spent a moment rubbing his mount's neck. He knew his gelding would find its way back to Sugarloaf and that there was plenty of sweet grass in the meadows along the way. And sooner or later, one of the mountain men or miners who knew Smoke would find him and take him back to the ranch. He slapped horse on the rump and watched as he trotted off down the slope. Smoke saddled one of the pack horses and began to make his way back down the mountain. He had a few surprises to construct, and he didn't know how much time he had before the gang would arrive. At dawn, Smoke began working without taking the time to cook breakfast. He shared some apples and sugar and some cold mountain water from his canteen with the horses, and then got busy. Finding a muddy, boggy area, he squatted and got large handfuls of mud and smeared it over rolls of lariat rope and rawhide he brought from the ranch. Once covered with the black mud, the rope blended in perfectly when laid on the ground or wound around a tree. Couldn't be seen from more than a foot or two away. He left one roll of the rope uncovered. This particular rope, he wanted to be noticed. He cut down a bunch of young saplings, 5 to 6 inches in diameter, and ranging from 5 to 10 feet in length. Using a small hatchet, since he didn't want to dull his tomahawk on the tough trees, he sharpened each end of the spear-like lengths of wood, then tied them to a pack horse. They would be needed later. As he moved along the trail, he stopped and gathered all the wild pumpkins and gourds he could find, storing them in a gunny sack tied to the side of his pack horse. Whenever he came to a rock fall, he picked up as many of the small fist-sized rocks as he could find, throwing them in the sack with the gourds and pumpkins. Several times he stopped at narrow places on the trail and got his shovel out and dug holes, about twice the diameter of a horse's hoof and 2 feet deep. In the bottom of these, he would place a sharpened wooden stake, then fill the hole with pine needles, making it look as though it was part of the trail. If stepping in the hole didn't break a horse's leg, the stake would impale its hoof and make it unable to carry any weight. Smoke hated the idea of injuring innocent animals, but in this case, it was them or him. He needed any advantage he could create, and putting Flatlanders afoot in these altitudes would quickly sap them of their strength and will to fight. In some places, next to drop-offs and cliffs, he dug parts of the side of the trail away, then made a frame of small branches covered with more dirt and pine needles to hide the defect. Any bronc stepping on these would stumble to the side, carrying its rider over the edge with it. Some heavy limbs were pulled back with the help of the horses and tied so that anyone passing would release him and be smacked in the chest, breaking ribs and arms and sowing more confusion. Fear was to be Smoke's strongest ally. These men were completely unused to being afraid of anything. Most were certainly not afraid of dying, at least not in ways familiar to them. But give them a situation in which they felt they were not in control, a situation where they didn't know what was going to happen to them next, where they were continually seeing their comrades in arms dying or being injured without warning. And even the strongest of them was liable to break and head back home. The following morning, as Smoke was riding through Pine Forest, familiarizing himself with the layout of the area, he saw smoke rising from just over the next ridge. He loosened the rawhide thongs on his colts and shucked a shell into his Henry. With eyes even more alert, scanning the woods and underbrush to either side as he rode, he walked his mount to the top of the hill to take a look. He saw an old weathered miner's cabin in flames, with two bodies lying nearby in a small clearing in front of a makeshift tunnel in the side of a mountain. He spurred his horse and loped down toward the burning building. Before dismounting, he took another look around, but saw no one in the area. Swinging down from his saddle, he approached the bodies, the Henry cocked and ready. There were two corpses, an older bearded man who looked to be 60 years old or so, and a younger, clean-shaven boy who had some facial resemblance to the first.
Father and son, probably.
Smoke bent and checked for signs of life. There were none. Both men had been shot through the head and were dead as yesterday's news. Smoke examined the area. Tracks and boot prints indicated 4 to 6 men and their mounts. The majority of the prints led to and from the mine entrance in the side of the cliff. He laid his rifle down, filled his hands with Colts, and walked slowly toward the black hole in the mountain. He parted his lips and breathed through his mouth to lessen the sound, crouched, and then inched his way along, feeling his way in the darkness. Seeing a movement in the still air, he dove to the ground just as a shadowy figure appeared before him and swung a 2x4 at his head.
I'll kill you, bastard!
After a brief struggle, Smoke managed to subdue the woman, sitting on her with her arms pinned to the ground. Astonished and surprised, Smoke helped her to her feet.
Look, calm down. I'm not gonna hurt you.
Master, you gotta help mother-in-law.
The girl pointed farther down the tunnel. Smoke holstered his pistols and went in search of the other lady. He found her 15 yards deeper in and picked up her limp and unresponsive body and carried her to the mine's entrance. After finding she was unconscious from a severe beating but had no life-threatening injuries, he got his bedroll and bundled her in it just inside the mine shaft. When he had the sleeping lady wrapped and protected from the chilly air, he asked the younger woman what had happened. She sleeved tears and dried blood off her face, patted her ratted and disheveled hair into some semblance of order, then held out her hand.
I'm Jessica Aldridge, and she is my husband's mother, Eileen Aldridge.
I'm sorry about your husband and his father. There was nothing I could do for him.
I know. The outlaws killed them before they took us.
She didn't have to tell Smoke what had happened. He could tell by the ladies' torn dresses and the bruises and streaks of blood on their thighs.
How many were there, and when did this happen?
They came to the cabin yesterday, 6 of them, and asked for food and water. Well, my husband and his father gathered up some supplies. 2 of the men grabbed them and 2 others shot them. They took Eileen and me down into the mine. They kept at us till this morning, then took off, leaving us for dead.
I was wondering why they didn't kill you.
Eileen passed out hours ago, and I pretended to faint, hoping that would stop them. Didn't.
Smoke walked to his horse and took 2 extra pistols out of his saddlebag. He gave them to Jessica.
You know how to use these?
She opened the loading gate of the Colt, spun the cylinder to check the loads, then snapped it shut with a flick of her wrist.
Yes, sir, I do.
I'm going to go after him. Then I'll come back here and see that you 2 get down to town, okay?
What's your name, mister?
Smoke Jensen.
Mr. Jensen, if the chance avails itself, I'd appreciate if you could manage to bring the red-haired one back with you. Alive.
Any particular reason why you want that one?
He's the one who shot my husband. I would like to discuss that act with him and watch his face while I kill him.
You got every right, I guess. If it's possible, I'll be back before sundown.
Mr. Jansen, do you have a shovel with you? I'm afraid they burned ours.
Smoke left the ladies with his shovel and rode off, bending low over the saddle to follow tracks the killers left. It was almost noon when he found their camp. The sleepless night must have made them exceedingly tired, as they were all sprawled around their campfire. No one was standing watch. Smoke slipped off his mount and walked on cat feet up to the camp, slipping his knife out on the way and filling his other hand with iron. At the edge of their camp, next to a saddle, he found a leather bag with the name Aldridge stamped into the leather. That settled it. As far as Smoke was concerned, these were the men he was hunting. He squatted between two of the sleeping men, and quick as a rattler striking, he slit their throats with his big knife. Two of the desperados came instantly awake, clawing at their sidearms. Two of the others shook their heads and stared groggily around them, trying to make sense of what was happening. Smoke stepped over and kicked one in the side of the face. The other, the red-haired one Jessica had told him about, Smoke grabbed by the throat and jerked to his feet.
Why did you do this, mister? We ain't done nothing to you.
Did you enjoy what you did to those women last night?
What the hell do you mean?
I want you to reflect on it. I want you to remember how much fun you and your friends had killing two men who were trying to help you. How good it felt to rape and beat their defenseless wives all night.
Why should I do that? And what business is it of yours anyway?
The mountain man picked up the 200-pound man effortlessly and threw him face down over one of the horses. He tied his feet to his hands beneath the nervous animal's belly.
I just hope it was worth it for you. That little episode of fun is going to have to last you an eternity.
What do you mean?
You got about an hour left to live. I'm taking you to meet the Grim Reaper, and she can't wait to say hello.
don't kill me! No!
Smoke left him and put the gent with the broken jaw across his horse the same way. After he was certain they were both securely tied, he began to move around the camp, searching carefully for anything that might belong to the Aldrich women. A leather satchel contained a quantity of gold dust and nuggets, and in addition, he found almost $10,000, some in old bills and some in new ones. Figuring it was probably stolen from other folks like the Aldriches, Smoke gathered up the gold and money and put it all in the satchel. The ammunition and guns that he could use, he packed on one of their horses. Finally, when he had taken everything of use, he strung the rest of their horses together and tied them to his saddle horn. It was almost dusk by the time Smoke and his prisoners arrived back at the Aldridge place. Aileen Aldridge was awake and was eating soup that Jessica had heated over a small campfire in the clearing. The cabin fire was almost out, though several logs were still smoldering and smoking, and likely would be for days. Jessica glanced over his shoulder at the procession and paled when she saw who was on the horses. She handed the soup bowl to Aileen, stood and smoothed her dress, and waited for Smoke with crossed arms. Smoke dismounted and inclined his head at the red-haired prisoner.
Now what? Your call.
She grabbed the man by his hair and bent his head up where she could look him in the eyes. She smiled, and the sight of it sent chills down Smoke's spine. He knew then the man was going to die very painfully.
Mr. Jensen, if you would be so kind as to tie this coward to that tree over there, I'd be much obliged.
Oh, Jesus, don't let her do nothing to me, mister. Just shoot me right now. Please help.
You miserable coward! You never had the decency to live like a man your entire life, at least try to have the courage to die like one.
Smoke bent and cut the rope beneath the horse's belly, leaving the killer's hands and feet tied together. Before Smoke could move, Jessica slipped his knife out of his scabbard and stepped in front of the red-haired cowboy.
Elaine, you can watch us or not. It's up to you.
After a moment, mother-in-law and daughter-in-law were standing side by side in front of the hysterical outlaw. Elaine took the knife and stepped up to him.
43 years. We were together longer than you've lived, young man. You might as well have shot me when you killed my man. One thing is certain, though. You'll never make another woman a widow.
She held the knife out, and with a flick of her wrist, she slashed his belt and waistband. His pants fell to the ground. He wasn't wearing any underwear or long johns. Elaine handed the knife to Jessica and stepped aside.
When I was a young girl, my father told me that when a stallion, a bull, or a male dog gets vicious or bad, there's only one cure. Do you know what that is, mister?
No, you're plumb crazy! You can't do this to me! Mister, for God's sake, stop her!
I told you, she couldn't wait to say hello.
Jessica laid the razor-sharp edge of Smoke's knife underneath the outlaw's testicles, and it was over in one quick upward motion. Jessica moved to the side to avoid the stream of blood and wiped the blade on his shirt. She handed the knife to Smoke and pulled one of the Colts he had given her out of her dress pocket. Without hesitating, she placed the barrel against the head of the man still tied to his horse.
I don't recall your name, mister, but I do recall that you weren't as brutal as the others. That deserves some leniency.
Jessica handed the Colt to Smoke and put her arm around Aileen.
Let's go finish that soup before it gets cold, dear.
God protect me from the wrath of a woman.
Sundance Morgan removed his hat and sleeved sweat off his forehead. Though the air was cooler the farther north they rode, a mid-afternoon sun and a cloudless sky was brutally hot. In the last few days on the trail, they hadn't come near a town of any size, and his men were getting testy and short-tempered. 3 days with no whiskey or females was beginning to cause problems. The saloon women they had taken from the stage line station lasted only a few days. Two were killed trying to escape. The other, 2 days later, had taken her own life. While one of the outlaws was having his way with her, she pulled his Colt from its holster, shot him, and then put the barrel in her mouth and pulled the trigger, ending her torture. They left their companion to die in the dirt beside the bullet-torn body of the prostitute. Sundance knew if they didn't come to a town soon, there would be trouble, blood trouble. Lightning Jack had taken to taunting some of the Mexican riders, calling them greasers and chili eaters. It was only a matter of time before one of them, or Pedro Muerte himself, stuck a knife between someone's ribs, and that would be the end of the uneasy alliance of the desperados. Just when he was about to call the gang to a halt for their nooning, Sundance topped a ridge and saw a small group of buildings in the distance. He twisted in his saddle and waved his hat at his followers.
Mi compadres, a town!
The killers perked right up and spurred their horses to a trot, anxious to sit on something that didn't move and drink something stronger than water. On the outskirts of the village was a hand-lettered sign nailed to a pole. Hell's Hole, Colorado Territory. The place was a little better than a mining camp, with more tents than buildings. The good news was a large tent with a board front attached that had the word saloon printed in large block letters at the top. Sundance held up his hand.
Okay, men. I know you're ready for some whiskey and women, but we gotta get the horses cared for first. Take them to the livery stable and get them fed and brushed down before heading for the dog hole. Don't forget who's in charge here. We got us a ways to go before we get to Smoke's stomping grounds, and I don't want no Bronx pulling up lane.
Sundance whirled his mount around and headed toward the far end of town where corral stables were visible from high ground.
We've got plenty of time to get alkalized and to get laid if that's what you're hankering for.
They rode off the ridge at a short lope. After leaving their horses in the care of an elderly man at the livery, the entire group of paid gunmen walked down a dusty street to the saloon. The townspeople didn't pay him much attention, since the town was full of characters not much different from Sundance's gang. typical of many of the small mining camps in the Colorado mountain regions. It was full of rowdy, rough miners, few ladies other than camp town whores, and not a few outlaws and men riding the Owl Hoot Trail looking for a place to hide until their reputations died down.
The hole. Then I guess it'll be about right for this group, huh, Elgato?
Only if it has tequila.
Even though it was just early afternoon, the place was full of hard-looking men. Sundance let his eyes adjust to the gloom, then walked to the far rear corner of the room and stood before two large tables, occupied by six men wearing denim jeans and thick shoes common to miners. They appeared to be well on their way to being drunk. Sundance smiled, looked over his shoulder at his men, then back to the seated miners.
Sorry, gents, it appears we're gonna need these tables.
One of the men looked up, too deep in whiskey to see the menace in Sundance's eyes.
That's too bad, mister. These here seats are taken.
Carlito?
Suarez pushed through the crowd to stand next to his boss and slowly slipped his knife out of its scabbard and stood there, caressing the blade. His brass tooth gleamed in the meager light from a kerosene lantern overhead.
Do you speak Mexican, mister?
Yeah, a little. Why?
Do you know what they call my friend here?
No. What?
Puero Muerte.
Dead dog? What kind of name is that?
No. It means hound of death. Now, how do you suppose he got that name?
By killing dogs?
Sundance planted a foot on the headless body and kicked him over backwards.
Get this trash out of here and bring us some drinks.
By the time the gang was seated at the recently vacated tables, the barman had dragged the body out the door and brought several bottles of liquor to set before them.
Will there be anything else?
See, tequila and women's.
We only got two whores, and they's busy in the rooms out back.
Make them less busy pronto. Or El Gato do it.
Yes, sir. I'll go get it myself. And I don't have no tequila, but I got some mezcal. That'll do.
You got any limes?
Limes?
Never mind. Just get the girls and get the mezcal and come back real soon.
Yes, sir.
As the barkeep scurried back to the bar, a tall, rangy man walked into the saloon, a greener cradled in his arms and a Colt slung low on his hip.
All right, everybody, just stay calm. Now, I want to know who's been killing people and leaving them laying on my street bleeding all over the place.
Are you the sheriff of this town?
Name's Jake.
Well, Jake, I guess I'm the one you got to blame for that body out there. Seems he insulted my man here. Called him a dirty name.
Well, I...
We don't want no more trouble, Sheriff. If there's a fine for littering or anything like that, I'd be glad to pay it.
Yeah, okay. Fine for littering's $2.
$2?
Yeah, but since you're new to town, I'll overlook it this time. How's that?
Jake, I knew when you walked in, you was a reasonable man. How about having a drink with us?
Why, sure. Why not?
Just what are you folks doing this town for fun, Sheriff?
There's only two things to do around here after dark. You're already doing one of them, and that's drinking.
As the sheriff spoke, two women dressed in well-worn, once brightly colored but now faded and shabby dresses emerged from the back of the room.
And there's the other. Sipping drinking's more fun than those two. They're mighty well used, if you get my drift.
After a week on the back of a bronc with nothing better to look at than the butt of the horse in front of you, I don't expect we'll be too choosy, my friend.
The women walked toward Sundance's men, stopping when they got within range of the smell of the group. One turned to the other and wrinkled her nose, rolling her eyes. Sundance noticed that look. He took a leather pouch out of his pocket and threw a handful of double eagles on the table.
We might not smell too good, ladies, but I'll bet the odor of this gold will take your minds off that real quick.
The whores smiled, showing teeth that would have made a horse trader wince, and joined right in, throwing arms around any man they could reach.
Woohoo! Come here, honey.
Yee-hoo! Mezcal for everybody, Roy. Let's get this party going. Woohoo!
Bull stood and swept the heavier of the two women up in his arms.
Oh, my. Well, ain't you a biggin'.
I'm going first this time. Any objections?
Not as long as you don't take too long. I got me a powerful thirst for woman flesh, and I don't aim to wait till tomorrow.
Don't you worry none, Lightning. Bull's a lot faster on a draw with a woman than he is with those two cannons he carries.
His load's a mite smaller with that weapon, too.
Yeah, but this one's good for more than two shots at a time.
While his men proceeded to get drunk and manhandle the remaining whore, Sundance drew the sheriff to a quieter corner of the room for a private talk.
What's your full name, Sheriff?
Jake Best.
Well, Jake Best, I'm pleased to meet you. My men and me are on our way up north. I got me a score to settle with the town and a feller up there. I was wondering if you got any men in this town who might like to make a little money. I need men that don't mind getting shot at, nor shooting back when it comes right down to it.
There might be a few who'd be interested in a deal like that. We got a few hereabouts that are meaner than a polecat, only not so smart.
Brains ain't exactly what I'm looking for, Jake. I got enough brains for all of us. What I need is mean hombres.
Oh, they're plenty mean, all right. Some of these boys would shoot their mama if she'd burnt their supper. Trouble is, they might be a mite hard to control.
That's not a problem. If money don't make them mine, then Mr. Colt will.
Then I'll spread the word you're looking to hire some men. I'll tell them to meet you here in the saloon tomorrow after lunch.
The sheriff looked around at the amount of whiskey the men were downing.
I don't suspect you'll be up and about much before then.
Sundance glanced at the whore sitting on Lightning Jack's lap. El Gato was standing between her legs with his hand stuck down her bodice.
Now, Jake, we all got some catching up to do.
The sun was directly overhead the next day when Sundance slouched into the saloon. His forehead was wrinkled, and his eyes squinted against the power of the headache sending lightning bolts through his skull. His groin was sore and had begun to itch, adding worry about the health of his private parts to the agony of his hangover.
Roy, bring me some coffee. Strong as you got.
You want me to fetch some eggs or steak from the boarding house across the street, Mr. Sundance?
No, just coffee and water, if you got any worth drinking. My mouth is dry as Coria County back home in Texas.
After three cups of boiled belly wash, with pieces of eggshells used to settle the ground still floating in it, Sundance was feeling slightly more alive. His two trips to the outhouse out back had relieved his gut some and eased his poor disposition a little. It wasn't long before some of the roughest-looking men he had ever seen began to drift into the room. They all wore pistols tied down low, and several carried rifles or shotguns slung over their shoulders. Before he knew it, seven men were seated at his table.
Okay, gents, here's the deal. My men and me are headed up to the mountains to a town named of Big Rock. I intend to tree that town and kill a man up there who did me dirt.
Same now, Big Rock? Ain't that the town where Smoke Jensen hangs his hat?
And who might you be, mister?
Well, see, the name's Evans, and I bet you be Sundance Morgan.
What makes you say that?
I was down in Mexico last year near Chihuahua. Ran into a Mex named Carbone. He told me about an hombre who fancied himself a gun hawk and how Smoke Jensen shot off his ear to teach him a lesson. He also said not to never turn my back on this particular piece of shit gunslick, cause he's a fucking back shooter.
Why, you...
Sundance grabbed for iron, only to find himself looking down the barrel of Evans' Colt before he could clear leather.
You got it all wrong, mister. Smoke Jensen bushwhacked me when I wasn't looking. It weren't no fair fight.
That's not the way I heard it, Pilgrim. And I heard it from more than one person. You're more famous than you realize, Sundance. Folks is laughing at you in your one ear from Mexico straight up to the goddamn Canadian border.
Evans stepped out of his chair, his gun barrel never wavering an inch. He backed toward the door.
I don't know about you fellers, but this is one galoot who'd rather go to bed with a grizzly than trust fucking piece of shit Sundance Morgan. I'll see y'all later.
Who was that asshole?
Right there? Jesse Evans. Made himself quite a name in the Lincoln County War a few years back.
Said to have killed more men than he has fingers and toes. He supposedly backed down Billy Bonney, but since he's dead, most everybody claims that nowadays.
Hell, I don't need him anyway. You men interested in making some money and having some fun along the way?
How much money we talking about?
We split up the take evenly among those who survive. But I'll personally guarantee you $100 a month, and I'll pay all expenses.
Including whiskey and women?
All you can stand of both.
Well, count us in. Yeah, it's gotta be better than scrabbling on our knees trying to dig gold out of them mountains.
Sundance gave each of the men 2 double eagle gold pieces.
Here's an advance, boys. We're gonna leave in the morning, so see if you can round up any more men who want a few of these in their pockets. And a chance to tree a town and kill a son of a bitch at the same time.
The next day, the gang gathered in the saloon.
Men, we've got some new partners who have agreed to come along to Big Rock with us. The man on the end with the scalps hanging from his belt is Blackjack Walker. He says he's not particular, he'll scalp anybody, red, brown, or black. The black man next to Walker is Moses Washburn. Moses was a buffalo soldier for the North, but I don't want that to put your men off, Lightning Jack. He deserted for killing any Southerners. He came out here and spent most of the war killing Injuns. Next to Moses is Slim Johnson. He's from over New Mexico way, but says he doesn't want to go back there because there's more than one noose waiting for him. Over there we have George Stalking Horse and Jeremiah Grey Wolf. They used to scout for the army and had to leave suddenly after killing one of their officers. He walked up on them while they was enjoying a little white woman loving. Seems she wasn't enjoying it quite as much as they was. They claim to be able to track a sidewinder through a sandstorm. We'll see. We might just need some good trackers if Jensen's fortified up in the mountains.
The gang stood and began to mill around the newcomers, introducing themselves and trading stories about mutual acquaintances.
Okay, boys, time to dust the trail. Load up what you like to drink and eat, and let's saddle our mounts.
As dawn broke and the sun peered over peaks to the east, Cal and Pearlie walked their mounts up a narrow mountain trail. It was little more than a path winding through dense ponderosa pines with underbrush and small shrubs tugging at their legs on either side. The air became thinner and colder the higher they climbed, and occasional small flurries of snow fell and dusted their hats and shoulders and their horses.
I swear, Pearlie, if we climb much higher, we're going to have to look under rocks and such to find enough air to breathe.
Yeah, and we're only about halfway to the top. It's going to get worse before it gets any better.
They rounded a bend where tall pines thinned out into a small clearing next to a sheer drop-off. Pearlie, who was in the lead, leaned sideways and glanced over the edge at a 200-foot drop straight down.
Ho, ho, boy, easy there. Yeah, Cal, we better walk our mounts through this narrow place. Mine's acting a bit skittish.
Cal reined up and jumped to the ground only a few feet from the precipice.
Yeah, that looks to be one hell of a long fall.
It ain't the fall that kills you, kid. It's the landing that messes up your innards.
They stood there, looking across snowy mountains and enjoying the view. Emerald green pines and junipers interspersed and mingled with brilliant sun-brightened white snow on peaks and in the valleys.
Holy shit!
Go, go! Jesus, Pearlie, someone's shooting at us!
Yeah, that sounds like a Sharp's Big 50.
What's that?
Well, it's a buffalo gun. I ain't seen one since Smoke's Mountain Men friends came to the ranch 2 years ago. Those old coots are about the onlyest ones who still carry them.
Come on out, boys, or I'll put the next one up your nose.
What do we do now, Pearlie?
Well, don't look like we have much choice, Cal. That Sharps will cut through this brush like a hot knife through lard. Holster them Colts, kid. You can't hit what you can't see.
Pearlie stood and raised his hands, stepping into the clearing with the back of his neck tingling. Cal followed, looking around in hopes of catching sight of whoever was firing at him.
Grab some sky, fellas, or I'll ventilate your ribs.
As Cal and Pearlie stood there, hands lifted over their heads, a ghost-like figure appeared out of the mist. He was leading a pinto pony and carrying a rifle that looked to be as long as he was tall.
Jumpin' Jiminy.
Cal had never met one of the special breed called Mountain Men. The old-timer was clad in buckskin shirt and pants, moccasins with leggings up to his knees, and wore what appeared to be a beaver skin hat. His grizzled whiskers were snow white, and his grin revealed yellow stubs of teeth. The barrel of his sharps ended in a hole that seemed big enough to put a fist in, and it was pointed straight at the two cowboys.
Howdy, gents. Name's Puma Buck. Just what the hell are you two pilgrims doing up here in my backyard?
Pearly smiled with relief, removed his hat, and sleeved sweat off his face.
Why are you grinning like a she-wolf in heat, boy? You staring death plumb in the face.
We're right glad to meet up with you, Mr. Buck. I met you about 2 years ago at Smoke Jensen's ranch, when you and the other mountain men came down to Sugarloaf. Cal and me work for Smoke, and we came up here to see if and we could find him. Seems Smoke's got himself a little problem.
I remember now. You be the puncher that eats anything ain't tied down. Smoke spoke right highly of you, boy. Said you'd lot like him when Preacher took him to raise. Your name be Pearly, if I recollect correctly.
Yes, sir, Mr. Buck.
My name be Puma, boy. But only my daddy was called Mr. Buck. So you two pilgrims came traipsing up here, seeing if you could help Smoke out, huh?
Yes, sir.
Appears you youngins don't have much faith that old Smoke can take care of herself.
That's not it at all, Mr. Puma. It's just that there's 30 more of them gun slicks on the way here setting to kill Smoke.
Yeah, we just figured a couple more guns wouldn't do no harm.
You boys got it all wrong. It ain't the number of guns you got with you or aging you that counts in a business like this. It be what you got deep down inside that makes a difference in who rides out and who gets carried out face down across a horse. I've been knowing Smoke since he weren't nothing more than a tadpole, and I'm here to tell you boys something. He had fire in his belly and steel in his spine even then. Old Preacher recognized that fact right off. Preacher was tough and mean as a coon with rabies, but he had a soft spot in him for young'uns, especially those with bark on them. Smoke must have got some of that particular weakness from his old teacher. He told me the other day he and Sally had taken in a button that'd be famouser than him someday. I guess that'd be you he was talking about, Cal.
That's why I'm here, Mr. Puma. I owe Smoke and Sally Jensen about everything a body can, and I am to pay him back by putting as much lead in Sundance Morgan's gang as I am able.
Now, don't get your fur in a tangle, boy. Everybody was young once upon a time. Ain't no shame in being green as a new sapling when you's first starting out. Shame is not learning from those that can teach you what you need to know. Come on over here and follow me, both of you.
Puma walked 20 yards up the trail and squatted, pointing at the ground.
Reason I shot at you boys wasn't to scare you. Leastways, not the only reason.
He wrapped his gnarled, arthritic hand around a branch lying in the dirt, partially covered with leaves and pine boughs. When he raised it, the men could see where the trail had been dug away and the trap had been set.
If in your mounts had stepped on this, you'd be buzzard bait, splatted all over them rocks down there by now.
Oh, I didn't even see that. It don't look no different from the rest of the trail.
Hellfire, boy, that's the whole idea. Don't do much good to set a trap for an animal if the critter can see it.
That don't look like no animal trap to me.
For the most dangerous and cunning animal there is, boy. The two-legged kind. Well, I guess if you youngins are bound and determined to help your friend, least I can do is make sure you survive long enough to pop a cap or two.
Shaking his head in disgust, he climbed into his saddle.
You damn sure don't have enough trail sense to make it on your own.
Puma turned his pinto into the woods and trotted off, avoiding the trail without looking back.
Follow me, boys, if you can manage it without getting yourselves killed.
Puma led the men on a torturous journey up the mountain. He rarely used trails or paths, winding in and out among trees and underbrush in no discernible pattern. When Cal and Pearly would think they were at a dead end, Puma would pull a branch aside and there'd be an opening just big enough for the horses and men to squeeze through.
Jiminy Pearly, he must know about every tree and rock on this here mountain. I'd have sworn there weren't no way up this hill setting the trail.
Yeah, but that old man's been roaming these mountains since long before either one of us was born. He ought to know his way around by now.
After 2 hours of climbing, just when the men thought that their horses weren't going to be able to go any longer, Puma led him into a small clearing in front of his cabin.
Here be home, boys. Light and set, and I'll get some cafecito going. Looks like you could use some.
As they stepped off their mounts, Puma disappeared into his lean-to. After a moment, he came out carrying a bag of Arbuckle's coffee and a pot that looked as old as the mountain man, and as black as if it hadn't been cleaned since he bought it. He filled the pot half full of grounds, added a small amount of water, and hung it from a trestle over the campfire coals. Stirring the glowing embers with his moccasin, he threw some dry grass and twigs on top. After a moment, small flames began to flicker, and then he added a couple of short logs.
Looks close enough to noon for me to eat. How about you boys?
Sounds good to me, Mr. Puma. I'm so hungry my stomach thinks my throat's been cut.
Boy, Puma sure has you pegged, Pearlie. You'd fight a buzzard for its leavings if you ever missed a meal. Which you sure as hell haven't since I've known you.
I got some two-day-old venison in the cabin, which should be okay since it's been cold lately. Or I can rustle up some quail eggs, fat back, and make some pan bread. It's your call, men.
If and it's all the same to you, Mr. Puma, I'd like some of that venison. Pearlie's a fine cook and all, but I'm getting a mite tired of fat back and biscuits.
You sure as hell didn't seem to mind when it came time to dish it out of the pan. At least not so's I noticed when you piled it so high it took both your hands to lift your plate.
You boys make me miss having a woman around to jaw at. Huh. Be going on 10 years or more since my last squaw died on me.
How'd she die, Mr. Puma? Killed by outlaws?
No, nothing like that. It was in the middle of winter, and she got out of the blankets to go and heat us up some coffee. One of those high mountain squalls blew in kind of sudden-like, and next thing I knowed, she was froze solid, squatting in front of the fire with the coffee pot in her hand.
Jesus, that must have been awful.
Yeah, it was. I had to wait for the spring thaw to get the coffee pot out of hand before I could use it. Long winter without cafecito, boys, let me tell you.
I knowed he was just having this on all the time.
Sure you did, Pearlie. Sure you did.
The men all pitched in to cook lunch. Cal peeled some wild potatoes and cleaned the dirt off onions Puma had in a burlap sack. And Pearlie poured coffee all around, while Puma put the venison on a spit to heat it up. Cal dumped the potatoes and onions in a pot to boil, then took a drink of coffee Pearlie handed him.
That is some belly wash.
Oh, just about right, I reckon. I wouldn't leave it up in a cup too long, boy. It's liable to eat its way right through the tin.
Puma drew one of the largest knives Cal and Pearlie had ever seen out of a scabbard and sliced off hunks of steaming meat and piled it on their plates. Then speared potatoes and onions and added them to the venison.
Dig in, men, before the flies and mosquitoes carried off.
Mr. Puma, Pearlie's been telling me some stories about when Smoke was first up here, when he was with Preacher.
Oh, those were the good days. Only law up here then was the law a man carried in his holster or in his saddle boot. The rivers was full of beaver, the woods was full of wolves and grizzlies, and the plains was full of Injuns. Hell. If I saw another white man more than twice a year, I'd move because the air was getting too civilized.
I was telling Cal about how Smoke went after Potter, Stratton, and Richards, the man who killed his brother and stole the Confederates' gold.
Yep, that was a right smart fracas, all right.
Can you tell me about how he got him, Mr. Puma?
Soon as I finish this here meat, boy, never could eat and talk at the same time.
The three men sat around the campfire, eating quietly and enjoying their meal. Occasional small flurries of snow fell, while frigid mountain air ruffled fringe on the old man's buckskin shirt, caused the younger men to hunch their shoulders in their heavy coats. Pearlie noticed the mountain man didn't seem to mind the cold. His blood must be as thick as molasses after all these years up here in the High Lonesome.
That were the last battle for some of my old friends, Dupree, Gray Bull, and the midget, Audie. They'd come out of the mountains to help the friend Preacher and his young boy Smoke to get his revenge. 'Twas near the town of Barry, but the final fight took place at an old ghost town named Slate.
As Puma launched into his tale, he seemingly remembered every minute detail, which was amazing considering his age. As his story came to a close, he stared silently at the flames of the small fire, remembering his old friends and their last battle.
You boys believe anything that old coot has to say, and you'll be sorry.
Smoke Jensen grinned and walked into the clearing, a Colt in each fist hanging at his side.
I heard you had company, Puma, so I slipped up here to see if they were friendly.
Boy, are we sure glad to see you, Smoke. We came up here looking for you to see if we could help out against the Sundance and his gang.
Uh-huh. And you end up listening to that old coot over there, the ugliest living mountain man in all Colorado territory, tell you some of his lies.
Weren't no lies, Smoke Jensen. Leastways, not too many anyway.
Boys, would you run up the trail just over the next ridge and fetch me the buckboard I left back yonder? Oh, and be careful, it's got a couple of women in it who've had a hard time.